Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
And older people use the internet, but 24 and under, kids live by the internet. And it is their social networking. You know, as parents, we've got to be able to get our arms around how kids are influenced by media. We've got to get our arms around texting. We've got to get our arms around sexting. 1 out of 5 kids have been sexted today.
These kids nowadays, oh boy.
As parents, it's a new world. And so we've got to learn what's influencing them, how they're being influenced.
It's a new world indeed, and if you're a parent and you have teenagers in the home, chances are you might even have 2 or 3 different generations of kids within your own family. How do you keep up with the culture? Well, on today's edition of Homeward, parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns will continue our conversation on some keys to raising great teenagers. It can be done, but it does take some work and it takes some intentionality. From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. Homeward is completely listener-supported. We appreciate your faithful prayers and tax-deductible donations given through our secure website at homeward.com. Welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. We are here in the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University, and today we're talking about keys to raising great teenagers, because, Jim, you have a new book, and we've got cake and ice cream and balloons all over the studio to celebrate it. It's really great. Thanks for every time you write a book, we have a party. So thanks for writing a book.
I'm still looking for the cake and the ice cream. I think that's a little
maybe
bit
that
of
was
a,
before you got
an
here.
Exaggeration. But you know what? I am celebrating it because the truth is that it's one of the things that I am most excited about in all the books I've ever written. I've spent my life caring about teenagers, and so I waited till my kids got out of the teenage years because it's such a humbling time as a parent. You know, it was humbling for Kathy and I. So glad to be here and glad to have you asking the questions instead of me.
Hey,
so we're kind of doing the flip-flop today.
Well, I'm gonna start this segment with a quote from Les Parrott that you included here that I love this because it's about kids and rebellion. Rebellion is a logical consequence of young people's attempts to resolve incongruent ideas and find authentic identity. Rebellion results from a desire to be unique while maintaining the security of sameness. Talk about that.
Well, you know, that's a mouthful, and he's an educator, and it's a quote that I put in the middle of it. It reminds me of a story where I was speaking at the Anaheim Convention Center to about 10,000 kids. And this girl comes up to me, and she's all dressed in black, and she's actually out of the punk rock movement. And she starts talking to me about how she really didn't like what I said because I said kids are influenced by their peers. And I said, now, are you influenced by your friends? And she said, no. But I could see out of the corner of my eye that there are some other kids, you know, some girls and guys who were all dressed in black and kind of their faces were kind of real pale and, you know, they had the exact same look.
Sure.
So she said, well, I do what I am myself. I'm my own person. She said, I'm not influenced by my friends. And I said, are those your friends?
They're all being different together.
Right. And she kind of looked over and I said, you guys kind of look alike anyway. Do you like the same music? Well, yeah, we like the same music, but we're not totally, you know, whatever. Well, I just kept asking her questions and sure, she was influenced by her friends.
Yeah.
So I think what he's saying is that, yeah, we want to be ourselves, but at the same time, teens desperately need these groups of people to hold on to so that they can be different yet the same. And I think what happens here is parents have to understand that who their friends are, they're going to be a lot like their friends.
Speaking of that connection point, we haven't talked about social media yet, but it is huge. And it's only been in the past even 2 or 3, 4 years that it's become even more important for us as parents to understand. Talk about how a lot of parents are just starting to use Facebook and Twitter, and you tweet, don't you?
I'm a tweeter.
You're a tweeter. You tweet.
Right. So I have a Facebook, personal Facebook. I've got the Homeward Center Facebook. So yeah, I'm totally into the Facebook world.
You're right there. And people are finding you. We've got thousands of people who like the Homeward Center and follow you and your tweets that are very, very entertaining. But social media, it's kind of fun for us as adults, but for kids, it's a way of life.
Well, you're right. You know, I have a quote in there that says 24 and older people use the internet. I was talking about internet in creating a media safe home chapter. But 24 and under, kids live by the internet. And it is their social networking. So, you know, you talk about Facebook. Facebook is the third largest country in the world. And it's all about social networking. Last year, 1 out of 7 people who got married met online. Mm. Now, we've got some older folks who might be listening going, Are you kidding me? No, that's never going to go away. That's only going to get larger in terms of the amount of people. So, you know, as parents, we've got to be able to get our arms around how kids are influenced by media. So the social networking, that's their mall or that's their ball game or whatever, where, you know, again, we can either allow our kids to just run rampant through this mall without anybody helping out, or we've got to come alongside them and help them, encourage them to know personal information, keep a computer out of the bedroom so that if they're going to do their social networking experiences, it's going to be in a, you know, a more centralized place. Because again, not every person who's on Facebook is a predator. In fact, very few who would be there compared to what you might see in certain places. But the truth of the matter is, we've got to be careful with that. And as parents, we've got to come get our arms around the media. We've got to get our arms around texting. We've got to get our arms around sexting. 1 out of 5 kids have been sexted today. So as parents, it's a new world.
Yeah.
We were never their age.
Yeah.
That's our cry.
Yeah.
And so we've got to learn what's influencing them, how they're being influenced.
Social media influence is important, I know, for kids as far as the movies and music and culture and things like that, but also in the area of sex and sexuality. And I know in the past couple of years, you've written extensively on sexual purity, the Pure Foundations campaign here at Homeward that has been so very, very well received because it's so comprehensive. It deals with kids ages 3, 4, and 5. There's resources for them all the way up through the high school years. But talk about the social media. You briefly touched on sexting, but the porn issue on social media is really influencing kids and sexual purity.
Well, it's interesting because, Roger, as you know, I speak a lot to parents, and most of the time when I'm speaking to parents, I hold up a cell phone. It's my cell phone. And I'll say, this will be the greatest distributor of internet pornography by the year 2011. Mm. It's right around the corner. And I watch parents and they just kind of look at each other and say, you know, kind of say, are you kidding me? So, you know, pornography is a problem. Greatest new users of internet pornography are boys ages 12 to 17. With that in mind, this could be what could take our generation down. And I think parents have to be incredibly proactive.
Mm-hmm.
First time a kid is going to see pornography is actually age 11, most of the time by mistake. But we had a kid actually at our church who a number of years ago typed in a word and he thought it was a sporting goods store in the area. And, well, he didn't really get the sporting goods store. He was looking for a ball or a glove or something. And he got porn. And for a year and a half, it took him 2.5 years to kind of get through it, but for a year and a half, he was absolutely addicted. This is a good kid, great family. But, you know, if I was that age and I started looking at some of those images, you know, it'd be hard to stop it. So the parents come to me and it took us a year to kind of wean him off of that, make the right decisions, get involved in some counseling because it was addiction, and then also help him build accountability around his life. He's going to struggle with that now for the rest of his life because every one of those images that he saw, which was thousands and thousands, are now embedded in his mind.
Don't mean to keep hammering on this point so hard, but one of the things that I read in Teenology that really got my attention was that you say that somewhere around 50% of parents don't actually initiate the conversation about sexual purity with their kids until after the kids have become sexually active.
Well, yes. Well, it's not 50%. I mean, I might have said that in the book. I'm surprised because a lot of times I'm saying it's about 15 to 20% of parents even have a conversation.
Mm.
Most don't have it early. They have it later. And what I'm saying,
50% of the ones who actually even have a conversation,
okay,
if they have one.
Okay. Yeah, here we are, statistics,
yeah,
you know, going
sure, right,
back and forth. But yes, parents have to have the conversation. All studies show this, that the more positive, healthy sex education kids receive, the less promiscuous they'll be. And so we start at a young age and we have those conversations. Now, when they're in their teenage years, they're not saying, hey, could we dialogue on, you know, pornography? I mean, I never had my kids walk up on that. So
yeah.
I had to be proactive and Kathy had to be proactive about having those conversations with our kids, watching something on TV and saying, hey, by the way, and then we bring up something on sexuality. So part of it is, I believe, the job of the parents. Most parents aren't doing that job. Now, one of the reasons is, I'm out in front of a group of people just last Saturday, and I said, how many of you received good, positive, healthy, value-centered sex education from your parents? And, you know, 4 people out of a large group raised their hand. So we don't know what to do or how to do it. I think today, just say, hey, look, it's going to be awkward if you got teens and you're talking about sexuality. It's going to be awkward. Don't lecture at them. Don't preach at them, but find ways to engage them. And then what I'm saying is raise the bar here. You know, the purity code that we talk about is in honor of God, my family, and my future spouse, I commit to sexual purity. And I'm going to do that by honoring God with my body, by renewing my mind for good, by turning my eyes from worthless things, and then guarding my heart above all else. You know, the Bible says, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. That's what we ask our kids to do. Not just kind of go, well, you know, we're not going to really talk about it, or don't do that and then silence, but actually have good dialogue, raise the bar, don't lower the bar. When parents do that, their kids tend to be less sexually promiscuous. So that's important.
It is kind of overwhelming, though, for parents when you consider how much sex and sexuality and the images that are in the media right now. You mentioned the, you know, try to take advantage of those teachable moments. Sad to say there are so many.
Oh, no problem finding those. You know, we call this early sexualization. We're in a period now with kids, teens, preteens especially, who are having this early sexualization experience because it's just everywhere in our culture. So we can either complain and gripe about it and just worry about it, or we can do something about it. And that means have good, healthy dialogue. Make it a part of the dialogue with your kids. They care more about their sexuality than they do about the theology of baptism. And that doesn't mean that the theology of baptism shouldn't be talked about in the church. It just means that kids are much more focused on this, and yet they're hearing silence from their parents.
Well, we are talking about keys to raising great teenagers today on the Homeward Broadcast. Parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns has a brand new book on this topic. It's called Teenology, The Art of Raising Great Teenagers, and you can find more information about that resource in our online resource center at homeward.com. You can also learn more about it. So many different ways to connect with you now, Jim. It's great. You're a tough guy to get a hold of sometimes because there are so many people who want to get a hold of you, but between Facebook for Jim Burns, Facebook for the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at APU, between your Twitter. Do you have stalkers? I mean, people, you have lots of followers on Twitter.
You know what? I've enjoyed it, yeah. Actually. I thought I was going to hate this when I started the Homeward Center for Youth and Family Facebook. But, you know, I love this. And I actually get on most every day and kind of stare at what people are making comments about and whatnot. The Twitter gives me a chance to send some kind of a thought or an inspiration. I don't really say I'm eating with my friend Ryan Daffron lunch right now at Bravo
and
Burger.
And he just spilled nachos on my jeans.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't do that as much. But, you know, I'm trying to send inspirational quotes out to people. I love the fact that people respond. And what is amazing about Twitter is if our listeners aren't on Twitter and they all of a sudden got on quickly, it's free. But what they'll see is they'll see, like, I can say something as I did 2 days ago, and then it got retweeted. And we figured probably 1 million people saw this little quote that I actually took from somebody else. So it's just this amazing network of getting things out. It's the new world, a great way to communicate. But again, going back to what we're talking about, Homeward is now moving into that with our brand new website. And I want to encourage people to take a look at that new website, homeward.com.
Yes. If you have not been to homeward.com in the last 60 days, you need to go there and go there now. And we'll come back with more from Dr. Jim Burns talking about keys to raising great teenagers as Homeward continues in just a moment. Welcome back to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. Roger Marsh here talking to Jim about his brand new book called Teenology, The Art of Raising Great Teenagers. And as always, we're in the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University. Jim, let's talk about communication for a second, because that's a place where a lot of us parents get blindsided from time to time. You caution parents that when a conflict arises in the home, it's easy to move directly toward being negative with our kids, and that's something that we don't want to do, especially
as the chaos
increases.
Well, you know what? I think too many homes are just filled with chaos because we're so busy, and so we go the easy route, which is the negative route. It doesn't mean when there's conflict that we don't deal with the conflict. It simply means that, you know, if we're going to communicate in a good way, we're going to have a positive atmosphere. We're going to have to build on the tone. I mean, let's face it, Roger, you can be angry with your teenager 24/7. You know, you're going to bump into each other, and it's just not always going to be easy. So part of communication and the key to communication is actually building into their spirit, having deposits placed into their life so that when you take a withdrawal, and you will have to, then it's going to be easier. You know, they're not going to hate you for the rest of your life. I find that for me personally, even, it's easy for me to go negative. It's harder for me to go positive, but the better communication way of doing things is to go from a more positive angle.
Okay. Answer this question. Fill in the blank. The person who has the greatest spiritual influence on a teenager is...
parents.
Yes.
You know, and you know what? I had a youth ministry background, and I used to think it was probably us youth workers until I started looking at the studies. And, you know, we weren't even close on it. It was mom. Mom has the most spiritual influence. Secondly is dad, and it's a distant second, which isn't all that good. Dads need to kind of, you know, move it back
Come
up
on,
there.
Dad,
and then it's actually family members. And what's interesting is I look at it, and I would think, well, that wasn't my case because I wasn't raised in the church. But you know what? From a spiritual influence standpoint, for most of my young years, it was my parents, even though we didn't go to church. Mm-hmm. I took on the idea, the values, the thoughts about religion or faith in the same way that my parents did, because they obviously were the ones speaking into my life on that. Yeah. So parents play a major factor in helping their kids with spiritual issues. And it's time for us to buck it up, take the responsibility, come alongside our kids and help them grow spiritually. You know, we've said, well, we've got them at a great church, or maybe we even have them at a Christian school, or, you know, homeschool, or all the other issues that they can do. So that's going to take care of it. No. It's the job of the parents to come alongside their kids and then find the church coming alongside them and other things. But it's really the job of the parents. The Bible's very clear on that. You and I have talked about this before, where we talk about what is called the Shema, which in Hebrew means to listen. But it says, the Lord God is one, love him with everything you have, you live it out, and then impress that on your children by actually practicing the presence of God at home. Not an easy thing. I'm not saying this is easy and that we have long, boring Bible studies in the Greek it means. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying have dialogue with your kids, and your kids will thrive when it comes to faith issues.
Your friend and mentor, Wayne Rice, once said, I'm paraphrasing, that you can't pass on something to your kids that you don't have yourself. And I was thinking of that, as you mentioned, just the whole premise of the Shema.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it really means that we've got to put energy in our own life. In that previous program when we talked about this, I talked about being emotionally healthy. Well, in many ways, if we can work on our own spiritual lives, and nobody will be perfect, but kids look to authenticity. So if we can work on our own spiritual lives, I think our kids will come around. They may buck the system for a while, especially in the teen years, but make sure that you're growing in your own spiritual life. Make sure that you have a small group that you're accountable to. Make sure that you're spending time worshiping God. And when you do that, your kids are going to notice that. I was talking with a woman just the other day who is a single mom, and her husband is not living the life. And so the kids go there and they have a whole different kind of parenting experience. And, you know, I wanted to kind of put my arm around her, and I just simply said in the words I did, and I just said, you know what, keep living it the way you're living. Don't just be the bad guy in this relationship, but, you know, have lots of fun. Bring your kids along spiritually as you grow spiritually too. So I want to encourage you that, you know, even if they're kind of not liking going to church right now with you, and they like what they do on Sundays with Dad at, you know, on every other Sunday, you know what, know that you living the life for God is going to be the influence in their life long term. And don't expect to get instant results from that, but look at long term results is really good.
You mentioned a single parent, and we hear from a lot of parents who are in marriage, and the teen years are really taking a toll on mom and dad's relationship. We got an email recently that said nothing like two teens and a confused mother-in-law to shape your marriage. Talk about some practical tips.
That's Did my it. Wife write that?
No. Talk about why you even have a chapter, your marriage and raising teens.
You know what? I love this chapter. I read all these books on teens. In fact, I honestly think that I've read most books on teenagers. That may sound so arrogant, but I keep up on this big time. I've never read a section in a book or a chapter in a book on marriage for teens, but I started interviewing people and they said, oh, it was the hardest season of our life in our marriage because we weren't on the same page and whatnot. So I had the audacity to think that I could write a chapter on it. It's really at a season when, you know, you have to try to get on the same page, but you can't ignore your marriage. You've got to be able to work on your marriage. We get so busy, you know, we're overcommitted. We get underconnected in our marriage, and we look up one day and say, wow, we're cheering on our kids okay through the teen years, and we don't have a relationship.
Yeah.
You know, we're 6 inches apart in bed, but miles apart relationally. And so I want to encourage parents of teens to work on their marriage as well and try to get on the same page with the teens, because a lot of times it gets split apart when you're having discipline issues, or if one of the kids is a troubled teen and really going down that wrong road. Boy, that puts major, major damage on a marriage if we're not careful.
You have a statistic in the book where you talk about something that you got from your friend Dr. Dave Stoop, talking about the percentage of couples who will divorce if they pray together. And it's a very, very small number. Is it 0.1%?
0.1%. Dave Stoop, who is a man I admire greatly, marriage counselor and a great guy, PhD, he's probably in his 70s now, but he made that statement. He said, if you pray together on a daily basis, and again, he's not talking about long-winded prayers or, you know, it's great if you're on your knees, but he's talking about just literally, you know, grabbing your spouse's hand and pray, even if when there's some tension in the home, that he just hasn't seen divorce. And he quotes the study out of a secular study, interestingly enough, that was promoting prayer as a way of staying together. I don't know that that's the only answer, but it really is something that I think we want to look at. And especially when kids are in the teen years, you know, you have a natural thing to be praying for. Not only are you praying for your family and life and, you know, your church and whatnot, but you're praying for your kids that God would protect them. And, you know, I can think of many times for Kathy and I when we maybe had a little conflict with one of our kids, or as our kids got older, a couple of them made some decisions that were not the wisest decisions. You know, that brought us together. And I can remember many a night kind of sitting in bed, you know, me grabbing her hand and us praying fervently for the kids. That drew us together.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I would suggest to parents that they try to do it. Now, some folks may say, well, my spouse is no way my spouse is going to pray. And I said, well, you know what? Start by maybe just saying, hey, why don't we just have a moment of silence for our kids? I think sometimes our marriages can come together more focused on, if we're focused on praying for our kids and even praying for each other or whatever.
Well, as we're talking about this most important topic of keys to raising great teenagers, and this, you'll find more in Jim's book, Teenology, and which we highly recommend, of course. Go to homeward.com if you're not there already, and you can find out more information about ordering a copy of that book. It's also available wherever Christian books are sold. Jim, we've got just a few moments left. I'm going to ask you one more question about this this season of parenting, Teenology, Raising Great Teenagers. There's a parent listening to us right now who's hearing what we're talking about and saying, okay, this is very helpful, this is very good, but my relationship with my kid isn't that great, and part of the reason is because I've been blowing it and I've just been making all sorts of mistakes. I need to kind of get some solid footing here. What's a good first step for that parent who has been blowing it and they're wondering, okay, how do I start making this right?
Well, you know, I think one way to start is with three words. I am sorry. It could be two words if you use a consonant.
I'm sorry, right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But, you know, I find that when parents are, you know, in a bad season in their own life or whatever, you know, the mistake they make is they aren't willing to just say to their kids, hey, I'm in a bad place and I'm sorry and I've made some unwise decisions and I'd like to kind of recalibrate. I want to tell you a story about just last week. A woman came to me and told me horrible things that her 13-year-old was doing. And then she told me her life, and it was just, she was out of control. Her life was out of control. Her husband's life was out of control. And I really appreciated, her daughter came to this event, part of the event, it was for parents, but her daughter came. And in front of me, she put her arm around her daughter and she said, you know what, honey, I want to say to you how sorry I am, because I've made some unwise decisions. You have too, but I've made some unwise decisions. And I want to recalibrate this relationship that we have right now. I want to recalibrate it by going out to dinner. And the girl kind of smiled because it was about 4 o'clock, by going out to dinner and let's just have some fun together because we haven't had fun in a long time. But I appreciated it because she acknowledged the fact that she was partly at fault and that she wanted to build the relationship. Because even though they're not in a good relationship and that there was tension, that daughter yearned for a relationship with her mom. And I'm not convinced that the mom was probably giving her her best, because the mom wasn't making good decisions in terms of just lifestyle things. So if you're in that situation, take the lead. You'll see throughout Teenology, I'm saying, as a parent, lead. And it's not easy to be a leader. It's sometimes lonely, but with God's help, you can lead and you can really watch your kid through the teen years, maybe even make some unwise decisions. But when they get through those teen years, they're going to become the responsible adults that you've prayed for. And that's really what you're after.
Amen, Jim. As I've heard you say so many times before here on this program and in your speaking at like Understanding Your Teenager seminars, for example, the end game here is not happy kids. We don't want to raise kids who are happy all the time. We want to raise kids who become responsible adults, who love God and have a healthy self-concept as well. Great conversation today. If you missed any part of it, remember we are always streaming audio at homeward.com. Just look for the program called Keys to Raising Great Teenagers. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.